Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and I am so excited about today's interview with two great friends of mine, Dr. Sean McDowell and John Stonestreet. These two men have put together a fascinating book titled Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage. And this is an excellent book. In fact, if you've been struggling with how to respond to the recent Supreme Court decision and are still wondering and forming your own view on this issue, pick up this book. It is thoughtful, it's interesting, and very well researched. But before we jump into the program, let me introduce our guests. Dr. Sean McDowell holds a PhD in apologetics and worldview studies from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, two master's degrees, and is currently a professor at Biola University in the apologetics program. He's the author of 15 books, including The Apologetic Study Bible for Students. He's a well-known speaker, and Sean, I am so glad that you're here today.
Ryan, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Yeah, I always feel a little bit inadequate when I say two masters and a PhD, but I love it. I love it. I love that you study. I love that you've got those degrees, and I love how you use them.
Well, I always feel inadequate because you've got this famous father, and I feel like, man, I just can't match up.
So. Nice. Sitting next to Sean is another good friend of mine, John Stonestreet, the voice of whom many of our listeners will recognize from the radio program Breakpoint, the Christian Worldview program founded by the late Chuck Colson. John is the newly named president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. He's a great speaker and author and holds a degree from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School and Bryan College. John, again, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be here.
It is good to have you guys here. This is an interesting book. I know a lot of people are asking, hey, man, the Supreme Court made its decision. Why write the book now? I mean, is it a little bit too late or is this a needed book right now?
Well, we wrote the book before the Supreme Court ruling came down with the clear anticipation of where culture was headed.
Yeah.
And we kind of felt like, as John and I conversed about this, that as we went around the country, as we read blogs, Christians just had this sense of despair since the Windsor ruling in 2013 and didn't know how to respond.
Explain the Windsor ruling.
Well, the Windsor ruling was related to DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. Mm-hmm. And it was backed originally by Clinton, and yet it was overturned in the Supreme Court, which essentially paved the way for anybody who's following it closely, said it's only a matter of time before same-sex marriage is legal and mandated in all 50 states. And I just – it was the strangest thing. Christians that I would talk to felt this sense of like we've lost. John had a youth pastor say to him, he said, it's over, we've lost, and we're thinking, my goodness, Jesus, you know, is not back in the grave.
Right.
And my dad is always, when times get tough, he's always told me, he goes, son, see it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
So we just felt like, you know, we don't want to write a book that says, you know, same-sex marriage, oh my goodness, the sky is falling. We wanted to say, here's the reality, but here's a so we can understand what's happened culturally, what's happened philosophically, take a look at it biblically. Mm-hmm. But how do we see this as an opportunity and respond positively?
Yeah. That was actually my second question. So John answered that. The sky isn't falling. I mean, I hear people say that this is it. This is the end of America. That's it. We're over. You know, we're on the other side of the hill. We're sliding downhill and we're just heading for a pit.
Right. I mean, listen, it's a serious cultural moment. There's no doubt about it. But the thing that every generation of Christians has had to wrestle with is the difference between the cultural moment and the big story of the gospel.
Mm.
And that's such an important thing to keep in mind. Sometimes we look at our moment and we think that's the ultimate truth of reality. The cultural moment's serious. I mean, we're taking the oldest known institution to man and now, you know, having already redefined it culturally, now actually in law, having redefined it. But as Sean said, the truth of the universe is still Christ has risen from the dead.
Yeah.
And so every generation of Christians has had to wrestle with this. More specifically, we're not the first generation of Christians that's had to live in a culture of sexual brokenness. And there's lots of stories throughout history from the very earliest Christians, you know, where little baby girls were seen as disposable and thrown into the backyard to die of exposure. And that, of course, sounds very familiar now that we've seen the Planned Parenthood videos as well. But these Christians went out and lived redemptively. They spoke the truth in love. They actually lived what they spoke. And they were behind really a cultural renovation. So as Sean said, our approach in this book we wanted Christians to know, okay, how do we respond now? How do we live hopefully out of the reality that Christ has risen from the dead? And I know that has to get very, much more specific. And that's what we tried to do as well.
Yeah, John, in fact, Sean, all three of us are Summit speakers, the camp here in Colorado Springs that teaches Christian worldview. And I know for the past few years, the younger, this is 13 to 18, 20-year-olds, have a lot of questions about same-sex marriage. Sean, you're a professor at Biola. You're with college students. How do college students, especially at a Christian college, how are they responding to this issue? Is it split? Is it a lot of kids that are like, hey, everyone should be able to love who they want to? I'm not saying that's what marriage is, but that's something I hear all the time. How are college students responding?
Well, I'd say in the past 3 to 5 years, the questions I get from junior high through college have changed. I used to get asked on homosexuality 1 out of every 100 questions if you go back 5, 10 years plus. All of a sudden, it was the first or second question always asked. But the reality is I get a sense that most, at least evangelical Christian kids, still hold to the traditional view of marriage. Most of them do. Now, who exactly qualifies evangelical Christian?
Yeah.
Things get a little bit fuzzy there. But it's not like all kids are just bailing on this and throwing it out. But what I do think is very few of them know what marriage is, know how to defend and articulate a biblical worldview, and they're hungry for that. So I was at a Christian school and I was doing some role playing, and I said, hey, I'm just going to role play in defense of same-sex marriage. Let's see you, all the Christian students, defend marriage. I'm telling you, Ryan, 2 or 3 minutes into it, this girl raised her hand, and I know her family. She was homeschooled for a period of time, now in a Christian school. Her father does apologetics. She stops. She goes, look, I want to defend marriage, but I don't have a clue how to do it.
Ooh.
She doesn't have a clue how to do it. I think she speaks for a huge majority of students. And the problem is that it's not like when we were growing up, there was, rumors about a kid who is gay, but it wasn't a big cultural subject.
Yeah.
Now it's their friends. Now it's on TV. So it's this very personal, emotional issue.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a confused moment and yet an opportunity for the church to say, all right, here's what marriage is. Here's how we actually address this issue. And I think there's some students that are hungry for that.
Yeah. That's why I know the three of us love Summit so much. It teaches a Christian worldview. It teaches you why you believe what you believe. Why is the Bible true? Why does it coincide with all of my belief systems? John, I know when we talk about this subject of worldview, parents are thinking, oh my goodness, really? I think this generation and the next are the first that really have said, I need more than just the Bible said it, I believe it, that's the end of it. But in some ways, I feel like the church is a little bit late to the game in saying, as a part of our Sunday school program, we're going to teach a Christian worldview. We're not just going to teach Bible stories. We're going to teach you why you believe what you believe. Are there a couple of books? Because I know parents are saying, do I have to learn all this stuff? And I'm saying, no, just read a book with your kids. What's a good basic book for parents that they can read with their junior high school kids that gives you a good overview of Christian worldview, or at least maybe a primer into it?
Well, yeah, there's a couple great ones. Of course, my mentor Chuck Colson wrote a terrific book called How Now Shall We Live, kind of in the tradition of Francis Schaeffer. And that would be a great one for families to read together with older students. When it comes to younger students, I think one of the greatest things that parents can do, and there's great books out there. Sean's got a bunch of terrific books on helping kids understand why they believe what they believe. But I tell you, one of the great things that parents can do is just ask good questions. In particular, ask questions about definitions. Back to the same-sex marriage topic, all the issues around same-sex marriage have to do with a more fundamental question. What is marriage?
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when we use the same vocabulary as the students in our lives, whether we're teachers or mentors or parents, we're not using the same dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to realize that when it comes to marriage, for example, this is a generation that's never seen a coherent vision of family on television. When we were growing up, in the golden age of television, the 80s, and this is a loaded reference now because of
I know
what's come
I know
to
you're going,
but
it's
you know
totally loaded, but it's still true.
But it's
yeah.
The Cosby Show. And look, regardless, on the personal level, it was a show in which the family was where you went to get your problem solved.
That's right.
One decade later in the 90s, it was Seinfeld and Friends, where family wasn't the solution. Family was most often the source of the problems.
That's right.
And now you jump to Will and Grace, which Vice President Joe Biden said did more to teach us about same-sex marriage than anything anyone's done so far, is what he said. Nice. And that's probably about right. But now jump to today, right? What's the television that's teaching our students? And it's Modern Family.
Yeah.
What's a modern family? It's no longer that family's good or bad. It's just family's whatever you want it to be. Mm-hmm. You have a divorce, remarried, trophy wife. You have a traditional home. And you've got a same-sex couple. Take your pick. Anyone counts as the modern family. So we've moved into a place—
Except there's not one actual healthy marriage in the bunch.
Well, that's
it's
exactly right.
It's all brokenness
right.
to show this is what's normal. Normal is broken.
But see, the shift in definition is really, I think, why parents need to always be asking the question, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
When someone says, well, I believe in God. Well, what do you mean by God? Or that's not true. What do you mean by truth? Or, you know, look at that same-sex marriage. What do you mean by marriage? What is marriage?
Yeah.
Because how one defines something is where— everything else comes from that. Mm-hmm. And of course, as your dad and you have talked about for so long, the definition of marriage has shifted in culture from something that's given, something that's bigger than us that we accept, to something that we define and we make up as we go.
Sure.
And that's where the whole game was lost a couple decades ago.
Let's talk about that. I want to tell our listeners, though, in our show notes, I will have a list of books. I'm going to have some of Sean's. I'm going to have the Colson book. We'll have links to where you can purchase those books so that you can read stuff with your kids. You know, I read to my kids every night. We've got a Bible storybook. We read Little House on the Prairie. You know, a lot of that stuff, the Little Britches series, but we'll have some books listed for you. But Sean, that was an interesting thing in this book you guys have written, and I was reading an article in Christianity Today where you talk about what marriage is and what it's not. And let's talk about that because that's a very important point in this debate, in this discussion. What is marriage?
I had a buddy who we were tweeting back and forth, and he said to me, he said, do you respect the rights of gays to marry? And I said, well, that's a loaded question. I realize that it's legal in our culture now, and I will respect my friends and people around them and treat them with the same civil love and respect I treat anybody.
You always have.
I tried to. I mean, that's not going to change how I treat people.
I didn't change because the Supreme Court made a ruling.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's not going to change how we treat human beings. At least it shouldn't. Mm-hmm. I said, but when you say, do I respect their right to marry, you're assuming that a man and a man and a woman and a woman qualifies as marriage. And that's the core question. Mm. So one of the things that John and I hit in the book, Same-Sex Marriage, is that people say, well, it's so bigoted to not accept same-sex marriage. And I'll say, well, if marriage really is this malleable institution that we can change and adapt, mm-hmm. And a guy and a girl count as marriage, then it in fact would be bigoted. But if marriage is by its very nature a man and a woman, then it's not bigoted to deny a man and a man or to be against that in principle because that's not what qualifies as marriage.
Sure.
So one of the things in the book that we talk about again is that this huge push has been for marriage equality. And we point out, we say, this idea of equality is a Christian virtue. It's a Christian virtue. It didn't come from atheism. It didn't come from secularism. It doesn't come from Hinduism. It comes uniquely from the Judeo-Christian heritage that we've been made in the image of God. And that's what gives us dignity as human beings, regardless of our age, regardless of our gender, regardless of our socioeconomic status or race. Human beings have intrinsic value. And even Friedrich Nietzsche, who we quote, says this idea of equality is a Christian idea. So what's ironic is
that how would you say to an atheist that says, well, my belief system, I believe in evolution. What is about evolution or about atheism that doesn't have equality?
Well, the question is what gives humans intrinsic value so we should treat all human beings equally?
Yeah.
On evolution, you have evolved through the same blind, purposeless process that other animals have evolved and plants have evolved. So if anything, as Carl Sagan knew, that means you ought to be in favor of animal rights because everything alive has equality in that sense.
Sure, sure.
So my point is just simply saying that the idea of equality is a Christian virtue. So much of the revisionist side has said we want to take the equality value, which is rooted in human being made in God's image, from the Christian worldview, but ignore the part that being made in God's image also has that we're male and we're female, and that God has actually designed marriage to be between a man and a woman in a permanent relationship for life. So equality is a Christian virtue. I'm in favor of equality, but we have to define what marriage is before we can tell somebody that they're not being equal, not being fair.
Yeah. You said in the Christianity Today article, marriage is not the government or church's endorsement of a strongly held, even sincere affection. It is an institution central to the human experience by which children are best produced, protected, and promoted.
Yeah. Well, what we're dealing with here is a competition between two definitions of marriage. Mm. Throughout the whole history of the world, in virtually every civilization, Christian and non-Christian, there's been an understanding of three things, as Maggie Gallagher so neatly sums up. Sex makes babies, society needs babies, and babies need a mom and a dad, right? Yeah. Those three things are never going to change, no matter how much technology we have or anything like that. Those are realities. Sex makes babies, society needs babies, and babies need a mom and a dad. And so therefore, even societies throughout history that tolerated, endorsed, promoted homoerotic or homosexual behavior still did not think that was the same thing as marriage, because it obviously wasn't. That was a relationship maybe that had something to do with affection or with the pursuit of pleasure, but it did not have something to do with children, and so therefore it wasn't something that the government stepped in on. What we've had now is essentially saying when we expanded the definition of marriage legally to say that now same-sex couples can be married, what we've done then is say that marriage now no longer has anything to do with procreation. It doesn't have anything to do with kids. Marriage now becomes the government's necessary stamp of approval to put another person's or another two people's deeply held affection on equal level with everybody else's. Mm. But you might remember, Ryan, when you went to get a marriage license, went to get a marriage license in Tennessee, they asked me some questions. The government had interest in the fact that I was getting married. But they asked me questions like, you know, are you both old enough? And have you already been married to anyone else? And, you know, are you related? You know, things like that. Questions that had to do with children, right? So marriage has always been that institution that has something to do with the future. What's happened is when we say that marriage now needs to be expanded to include couples of the same gender, we're saying that marriage doesn't have anything to do with children. So what we have now is a brand new definition of marriage. What we've been told is that the definition that we have has been expanded. What's happened actually is the definition we've been given in law, particularly by Justice Kennedy's decision, is a brand new definition.
It's a new thing.
It's a new thing.
Yeah.
And here's the other irony of it.
It's the same word. It's a new dictionary.
It's a new definition. And that goes back to why parents need to walk with their kids through definitions. But here's the irony of it, Ryan, in terms of equality. We now have a more arbitrary definition of marriage that is more highly discriminatory than the one prior.
Yeah.
This is the irony. Prior to Justice Kennedy's decision, we had an understanding of marriage that had to do with men and women because it had to do with children. And so all of these other expressions of human affection or human relationships were left out. Incestuous marriage, polyamorous, same-sex marriages, they were left out not because it was arbitrary, but because there was a clear definition of marriage.
Yeah.
Now we have a new definition of marriage, which is almost completely based on furthering people's happiness, has nothing to do with anything gender-based. And you think about it, if marriage has nothing to do with children, it shouldn't have anything to do with gender. If it has nothing to do with gender, it doesn't have anything to do with numbers. It shouldn't be two as opposed to three or four or five.
Right.
And there shouldn't be any sort of restrictions. So now we have a definition of marriage that's completely based on happiness. But we're leaving other people out. We are more arbitrarily discriminatory now than we were prior to the decision, which means as Christians preparing for this brave new world, this same-sex marriage won't be the only redefinition of marriage that we have to deal with. So we should now be thinking about these other expressions of marriage. How should Christians respond?
Yeah.
And here's really the bottom line question. Greg Kokla said it well. He said, is marriage something we describe or marriage something we define? In other words, is there an objective existence to this thing we call marriage, and we describe what it really is? Or is marriage something we define, meaning we invent this thing and come up with it? So does it have objective existence? Or is it this subjective institution we can change based upon our feelings or the sign of the times? And Frank Beckwith, a friend of ours, is also a Summit teacher. I'm sure I know you know him, Ryan. Frank said, you can eat an ashtray, but that doesn't make it food. In other words, there are certain things that are objectively food and certain things that are objectively not. So the question really at its core, and I'm amazed how many people just skip over this and don't ask, what are the root assumptions at the heart of this debate? Hmm. So if marriage really is built into the fabric of the universe, then it's not bigoted. It's not hateful. It's not intolerant to be against same-sex marriage because same-sex marriage is not an objective, real thing. Now, if it is a real thing, then I would be bigoted and I would be hateful and I would be intolerant.
Right.
But that's why when these conversations come up, I say, wait a minute, before you call me names, before you attack me, let's talk about the question, what is marriage? And as a church, I don't think we've done a good job. And as parents of living out and modeling and helping our kids understand what really is marriage.
I'm thinking about the Constitution right now and the way people view the Constitution. Should we be trying to figure out what the founding fathers meant in the Constitution? Or should we be saying this is what they should have said in the Constitution? That's something that's going on, and it feels like that's what's happening with marriage. Maybe it was that. This is what I'm hearing now. It shouldn't have been that. It's not really about kids. It's not about all those things. This is what it should have been about. So it is a redefinition of something that we didn't invent. That's what I thought was so interesting. What hubris did we have to say, we're going to redefine something that we didn't create? We didn't make marriage. We didn't invent marriage. This has been an institution since the beginning of time. And now we've decided that, well, that's not what it should have been. We know better than God, so we're going to say it's something else. We're going to define it as something else.
You know, C.S. Lewis called that chronological snobbery, that anything newer is necessarily better. And, you know, specifically on the Supreme Court decision for this year, that's what Kennedy essentially argued for. Mm. If you look at his argument in his decision, it wasn't based on the definition of marriage. It wasn't even based on constitutional realities. In fact, Chief Justice John Roberts had that terrific response. You know, if you're going to celebrate today, go ahead, but don't celebrate the Constitution.
Right.
Because what Justice Kennedy argued for was that we are a more enlightened people. We are more tolerant. And so we are smarter morally than those that had gone before. It was really almost case in point chronological snobbery. Ironically, 2 weeks later, we got the first Planned Parenthood video, and it made me think, really, is this the enlightened society that Justice Kennedy was talking about? Is this the morally enlightened? It's a very dangerous thing to ignore human history. G.K. Chesterton said, you know, before you take down a fence, you might want to ask what it was put up there for.
Yeah.
And we took down a fence. And this is honestly what concerns me as well, and why one of the reasons Sean and I wrote this book specifically for Christians is in 2014, we saw many Christians move on this issue. I don't think it's this vast shift like we hear in the news. And there's been a lot of, I think, more helpful surveys that have helped us realize that. But there are many who claim to be Christian, even evangelicals, to take the Bible seriously, that'll say things like, well, we got this wrong. Human history did not understand the idea of loving gay relationships. Or here's the worst one. To take a stand on this is to compromise the gospel, as if God's morality is in conflict with God's gospel.
Yeah.
These are very dangerous positions of chronological snobbery in their own way to ignore that. And that's why the Constitution, Ryan, never mentions marriage. People say, well, Jesus never talked about same-sex marriage. Well, of course, no one did until yesterday.
Right.
This is so new in human history.
Yeah.
The idea that marriage has nothing to do with children is brand new. It only happens after the lies of the sexual revolution are firmly embedded in a society. Mm-hmm. You know, same-sex marriage is the fruit of all of these ideas. It's not the root. And to change all of our views because of this is a pretty dangerous place to be.
It is. I'm going to break in now because we're out of time for today. But tomorrow I want to get into, how do we talk to our neighbors that disagree with us? How do we talk to our kids who are going to be in school with kids that are volatile? It's an inflammatory subject to talk about. You know, recently I heard about a child that was in a school and the teacher said, who's a Christian here? And one girl raised her hand and he said, "Oh, so you think it's okay to hate gay people?" You know, and it's that situation that we're living in these days. So I want to come back to that tomorrow. Sean, John, thanks for being here. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Thank Ryan.
The Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage wasn't the end of the conversation on this issue. As Christians, we must continue to speak out for truth as we respond to cultural agenda. For more information on Sean McDowell or John Stonestreet or their new book, Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage, visit our website at drjamesdobson.org and join us next time for part two of this interview. Before we go, let me remind you about this month's exclusive offers. First, for every donation of $30 or more, Family Talk will say thank you by sending you a copy of my latest book, Wanting to Believe, along with a corresponding DVD from our Building a Family Legacy film series. And we're also offering my dad's book, When God Doesn't Make Sense, for a donation of $20 or more. To take advantage of either offer, give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by clicking the tab at drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.